From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our topic on this edition of the program, we commemorate the quintessential American holiday, Memorial Day. On the last Monday of May, Americans honor the men and women who died while serving in the U.S. military. Formerly known as Decoration Day, Memorial Day is an opportunity to remember the valor of those who gave their lives in the many conflicts of the 20th and 21st centuries. World War I, World War II, the Korean War, the Vietnam War, the Gulf War, the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, among others. Typically on this day, which falls this year on May 25, Americans visit cemeteries and memorials and participate in parades. Memorial Day is also seen as the unofficial kickoff of the summer season in the United States. Our special guest on this edition of the program is a veteran who oversees a fascinating project that honors U.S. veterans. Colonel Karen Lloyd is director of the Veterans History Project at the American Folklife Center of the Library of Congress. According to the LOC website, the project aims to collect, preserve, and make accessible the personal accounts of American war veterans so that future generations may hear directly from veterans and better understand the realities of war. Prior to her current position, Colonel Lloyd was senior advisor to the library's chief of staff. Before joining the LOC, she was commissioned as a Medical Service Corps officer in December 1976. She served for 14 years as an Army aviator, with six of those as an MSC evacuation pilot and the first female MSC officer to receive aviator wings. After 28 years of service in a variety of senior management positions, Colonel Karen Lloyd retired in 2004. And as Americans look forward to Memorial Day, we'll talk with Colonel Lloyd about the origins and significance of the Veterans History Project. Colonel Karen Lloyd joins us via Skype from her home office. Welcome to the program.
Oh, Carol, thank you so much for having me.
Colonel Lloyd, we're so delighted to have you with us. First, why did you get involved in the project, the Veterans History Project? What attracted you?
Well, actually, what attracted me is that I am the widow of a veteran. I'm the sibling of veterans. I am a veteran. I'm the daughter of a veteran. I've seen this from all sides, and I understand how important it is that we get volunteers from across the nation to reach out and talk to the veterans in their lives and their communities and get those oral histories, get those paper-based products, those letters, those photographs, those memoirs, those diaries, so that we won't lose those stories. So they'll send them, donate them to the Library of Congress, to the Veterans History Project, and we'll make sure that they're safe and secure for the future so they'll be available.
And tell us, when did the project get started?
Oh, that's a fun story. The project actually got started in October 2000. And the backstory is that Representative Ron Kind from Wisconsin was over the summer at his home in Wisconsin, and his father and his uncle were talking about what they did in World War II, and he had toddlers. And he said, oh my gosh, can you hold for a minute? He wanted to go in and get, you know, those big cameras? So he got his big camera, and they started talking again so that they'd be available for his two young children that were in diapers at the time. He came back to D.C. and he said, you know, I can't be the only one. And he gathered up, and our legislation was unanimously passed. When does that happen? In October 2000. So this fall, we're going to be celebrating our 20th anniversary, and we're very excited about that.
That is just fascinating. I myself am the daughter of a World War II veteran, and I deeply regret that I didn't get my father on tape. I wish I had been able to interview him. I did interview my mother, and he met my mother during World War II in England, where he was stationed. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those romantic stories. Tell us more about the artifacts, or rather the documents and so forth, that you are collecting, and expand a bit on how you go about identifying veterans and interviewing them.
Well, I would suggest to you that veterans are hidden in plain sight. And it really, they need to know that you're looking for them, but they also need to understand that you're willing to listen and really listen. And we're very fortunate because we have lots of organizations all across the United States, in addition to individuals that are all willing to make that effort and take that step. Jeff Weeks in Arkansas, in his hometown, recorded over 350 different individuals. And then what he would do is he would put a synopsis of those interviews one by one into the local paper so that not only we have the interview that he gave, but also that the local neighbors now knew, oh, here's a new veteran. The Long Beach Red Cross does an amazing job with reaching out to their local community and getting interviews as well. And we're really pleased that there are partners, but we have partners all across the U.S. Something that's a lot of fun is Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. These can be projects for both their Eagle Scout or their Gold Award. And we have a special point of contact. So we ask them if they're interested to get a hold of us. And we will certainly share with them what we've learned, the lessons, what works, what doesn't work, to help them with their project. We take paper-based, in addition to oral histories, we also take a variety of paper-based products. We take two-dimensional artwork, drawings that veterans have made. A lot of them use that as a stress mechanism. Letters. I love letters. As you can imagine, with the electronic age, we're seeing fewer and fewer of letters and cards. And that's, from my perspective, so sad, because letters really give you that insight, because generally they were intended on a one-to-one conversation. And you actually get to peek in a little bit and really read feelings and thoughts and pretty amazing things. We also take photographs, only original. Everything we take has got to be original. We also take diaries. We also take memoirs. So there's a variety of different ways for you to pull together information for us. We do have some standards, though. You have to have a 30-minute interview, or you have to have 20 pages of diary or memoir, or you could have 10 photographs or 10 letters. Meeting any one of those thresholds, we call it the 30-20-10 rule, then allows you to put additional information. For example, if you had a 30-minute interview and two photographs, perfect. You're welcome to be part of our collection at the Library of Congress.
Back to my own father, Colonel Lloyd, I didn't have a chance to interview him, but would you accept, without the interview, original photos and other documents alone?
Absolutely. In fact, I would encourage you to think about giving us 10 photographs or 10 letters, all that have to do in and around his service. About a year ago, a gentleman called me up from Winston-Salem, North Carolina, and said, I was cleaning out my parents' attic and I found two shoeboxes. And in them were letters from my parents from 1941 to 1946, while my dad was in service. Is it something you might want? Oh my gosh, goosebump time. I said, not only would we want it, we'd love it. He said, well, I'm scanning them. I'll send you the scans. And I said, well, I'm sorry, we can't take the scans, but if you'll send us, after you finish scanning, the original letters, let us know. Well, he had planned to come up, but the pandemic occurred, and we've been emailing back and forth with him, and he's planning on coming up when the library opens back up to make that donation ceremony of these amazing letters between his parents during the war. We have a world-class conservation preservation lab, so we will really take good care of it, and so that it is available for future generations. So I would encourage you, and I would encourage your viewers, to consider the Library of Congress as a repository for those amazing memories that are part of their family, so that we can keep them safe for them. They'll be accessible to them, but they'll also be accessible to members of Congress and their staff. They'll be available for researchers. They'll be available for a whole variety of folks that are interested in coming in and seeing what these stories are all about. A researcher that came in about 2 years ago was Liza Monday. And from that visit, she was able to create the book Code Girls, where she talked about the women in World War II that were told, just tell them you're a government secretary. And they were breaking codes, like they broke the purple code for Japan, which is why we were successful in Midway. And Bill Nye, the science guy, his mom was a code girl. So he came, we had a big reunion, first national reunion for them, and he actually gave us his mother's collection. And so it's pretty amazing, too.
It's just a tremendous treasure. And I think our international listeners can also learn something, because history is critical for any culture. And a lot of the developing countries that we are broadcasting to have had their challenges, conflicts, and they could perhaps replicate this type of archive and document their own struggles, you know, for independence. Of course, it's not the highest priority when one is dealing with a pandemic or economic challenges, but I think it's an interesting model.
Thank you for that. We actually had some folks from Britain come over and talk to us several years ago about what we were doing, why we were doing it, and we gave them our field kit. We gave them all the different things that we have. In fact, we are in the middle of a pandemic, but that doesn't mean you can't go up and explore our collection. A lot of our collection is online at our website, loc.gov/vets. And there you can peek in by name, by unit, by conflict to see who's been there and what did they do. And I think what your viewers may find is that with a lot of the stories, the veterans connected with the locals on some level and realized, wow, they're a lot like me, you know, especially after the conflict was over and sometimes during the conflict. And so that's been really interesting.
Colonel Lloyd, talk about the Gold Star families.
Oh,
project.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Carol. Memorial Day weekend is really all about the Gold Star families, and I'm so glad that you brought that up. 3 years ago, Congress passed legislation that expanded our mission to include the Gold Star families. And so what we're able to do now is take first-person accounts from the parents, from the spouses, from the siblings, from the children of those that paid the ultimate sacrifice. And it's so important that we get it right. We actually went out to a variety of different experts, and we now have specific lists of questions for each of those different perspectives. So please contact us at our official email site, victoroscarhotelpapa.loc.gov. So V-O-H-P at loc.gov. And a lot of people go, well, why V-O-H-P? Our program started as purely an oral history program. And we almost immediately realized, well, that's not going to work. There's so much more when you start to add the paper-based products, when you start to add those letters, when you start to add those photographs, when you start to add those diaries and memoirs and the two-dimensional artwork. All of a sudden, you have a much richer story to tell.
Absolutely. And what we're talking about is preserving memory.
Yes.
And allowing researchers to, as you alluded to earlier, write books and publish articles, which are critical in enabling us to document and preserve history and memory.
Oh, spot on, Carol. That's exactly right. And I, again, can't thank you enough for helping illuminate this program so that your viewers will have a sense of how they can become a part of this history project, how they can learn what veterans saw, felt, and heard during their selfless service. And we don't just restrict ourselves to those that were at the tip of the spear. We look at all veterans from World War I through the current conflicts because we want all those stories, whether it's from the mess hall, whether it's from a hospital, whether it's from the cockpit of an aircraft, whether it is from the deck of a ship. All of those stories are incredibly important. And when you stitch them together, those stories start to talk with each other.
We'll hear some statements from these veterans in the second half of the program.
Oh, but first, hear their voices.
Yes, indeed. But first, you're listening to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Our special guest is Colonel Karen Lloyd, Director of the Veterans History Project at the Library of Congress. She joins us via Skype as we continue to practice social distancing. I'm Carol Castiel. This is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available for free download on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel VOA. Here's a shout out to a loyal listener, Facebook fan, and a fellow broadcaster from Accra, Ghana, Johnson Abiwu Gleme. Johnson works at Oman FM 107.1. Thanks so much for writing in. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please write to us at pcusa@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. We're back to our conversation with Colonel Karen Lloyd, Director of the Veterans History Project at the U.S. Library of Congress. Well, Karen, just before the break, we were talking about the many voices, not just those who saw combat, but nurses and other types of veterans. I would like to introduce our listeners to a nurse from Vietnam who interviewed with a Boy Scout for the Veterans History Project. Ray Mary Leff from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, my home state and the city where I went to college. Do you know Nurse Mary Leff?
Absolutely. She was a captain, and she's got a fascinating story. She was on the USS Repose, which was stationed off the coast of Vietnam, and they got the worst cases. You know, in a field hospital, you get them right away, but they got the cases flown in by helicopter that needed some serious medical assistance. And what I love about her interview is when the Boy Scout said to her, "So tell me what you remember." She said, "You know, it was hectic, it was heartbreaking, but it was so rewarding. The people that I worked with, the doctors, the corpsmen, the other nurses and the patients, I'm still in contact with all of them." I mean, how amazing is that? It's over 50 years. Can you imagine? And she said, when he asked, "So how did it change you?" And she said, "Well, I don't take things for granted anymore."
Well, Captain Leff really struck me as well for the very reasons you mentioned, but also because what she said resonated, given what we are now confronting here in America and probably around the world, but particularly here in America during this coronavirus pandemic, when she spoke of the heroism of the doctors and other caregivers, the bravery of the soldiers, and the sadness of actually having to sometimes witness their death. And that resonated with me, as I said, because we're seeing today the doctors and nurses on the front lines of combating COVID-19, our own invisible yet deadly enemy. And so I'm going to play for our listeners in her own voice what she had to say during her interview on that topic with a young Boy Scout, talking about the strong bonds that she forged with her fellow nurses and doctors.
What was a typical day like? It's very hectic. Very challenging, heartbreaking, but very rewarding because you could really care for the men and take care of them and heal them.
All right, were the doctors good?
The doctors were exceptional.
Were they nice?
Very nice. We had, in fact, it's a camaraderie that one has. Once you meet these doctors and the nurses and the corpsmen, you become a family, you become a unit, and this remains with you for the rest of your life.
And how did you deal with the death of a patient?
It was very hard, the death of a patient. We had what we call death watch, and I recall watching this young man slowly die. It was hard.
That's Captain Ray Mary Leff, a Vietnam War veteran. But you know, Karen Lloyd, I want to also bring in the voice of someone who served in World War II. Mm. And, you know, that's very important also for the Voice of America, you know, because the Voice of America was founded in 1942 with the express goal of combating Nazi propaganda by providing unbiased news and information to countries outside the United States. So it's very important for us here at the VOA. And I think we should also say with respect to World War II that this month marks the 75th anniversary of the end of the war in Europe.
Oh, it sure does. May 8th.
Absolutely. And of the 16 million U.S. veterans who served, about 300,000 are still alive today. That's according to the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs website. Speaking of which, before I go into the story by one of the veterans from World War II, what other institutions do you collaborate with? Do you work with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs or other institutions?
We work very closely with the Department of Veterans Affairs and their medical centers all across the country. We also work with the National Museum of the American Indian, do a lot of work with them. Native Americans happen to be a gap in our collection. The VA also has other tribal government affiliation, and so we work with them as well.
That's very interesting that you work with the National Museum of the American Indian, because in this soundbite from an interview with this World War II veteran I'm about to play, he actually talks about some of his comrades in arms. They were Native Americans. So that is amazing and a very important point to underscore, that they were part and parcel among many African Americans who served in World War II in particular.
What's fascinating about the Native Americans is they have a warrior culture. And it's something I've learned since I've been in this job. And I had no clue about it before. But they actually have a sending ceremony when they send their veterans off to war, and then they have a welcoming ceremony when they come back. And they're held in incredibly high regard, and when they have a powwow, It is led at the very beginning. It commences with a parade of the veterans at the front of the dance they start with, and then they end it with the veterans as well. So it's been an education for me, but I have such high regard for the Native American community. And in fact, they serve at a higher rate than the general public in the armed forces still today.
That's really fascinating and very interesting. Well, let's go into the story of Benjamin Cooper.
Okay.
Who was a World War II veteran. I'm sure. Do you know Benjamin Cooper?
I do know Benjamin Cooper. And what I love is that he was a combat medic and he talks about what that was like. And I mean, what an incredibly hard job, but his unit and his soldiers trusted him to do the right thing, do it the right way. And he has some fascinating stories about really what happened to him while he was in Germany in the February through August timeframe of 1945. And one of the stories that resonated with me as a medevac pilot is that they'd had a battle, the battle was over, they'd lined up the prisoners, and one of the prisoners was a German medic, had the Red Cross on his helmet, had the Red Cross armband, all those things that as a medic you have. And he has his Geneva card. I had one of those too. And he sees this amazing German medical kit. And he said to the German, I want that. And the German said, you can't have it. And he said, oh, yes, I can. And he has it to this day. And he kept telling the interviewer about it. I wish that I had a chance to see it. He was going to show it to him at the end. I saw a lot of the pictures. I didn't actually see his German medical kit, but the fact that he kept it for 75 years, and he kept saying how amazing it was because of all the things that he had in it. But the other part that was pretty interesting is that he went on a three-day R&R in February 1945, and he found a synagogue. And in the synagogue, he actually met a Frenchman who had three daughters with him, and he had a picture taken with him and the three daughters. And then later, he tried to reconnect with them and was able to connect with one of the daughters, and she actually taught English. And so 75 years later, while she didn't remember him, she remembered the picture and her in the picture with her sisters, which I thought was pretty amazing. And that occurred like right after May 8th. And the part that I found the most heartwarming was he talks about on April 26th, how it was the second day and his unit was given a mission to liberate some camps. And he goes, that's all they were told, some camps. He goes, and he wasn't on the first wave of the folks that went to the camps. He said, but they then took him on the second day and they took a lot of the soldiers because they wanted folks to witness this.
Yes.
So that they would never forget.
Exactly.
And he said, how could you forget? You know, and as a Jewish service member, his friends told him, do not put your dog tags around your neck. Put them in your pocket. Because if something happens to you and the Germans find your dog tag, they'll notice that your religion is Jewish and they will harm you. And so in addition to putting his dog tags in his pocket, the father of the three daughters that he met that he took a picture with actually gave him one of his cloth Star of David. And to this day, he still has it. That must have been such an amazing moment in time for him.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. I listened to all of those stories from the interview, which was fascinating. And I think we need to remind our listeners that one of the reasons why the United States entered World War II was not only because we were attacked at Pearl Harbor, but because of the Nazis' attempt to control Europe and the Holocaust, you know, the targeting of Jews, you know, six million
exactly.
Jews, of course, were perished. And of course, it's very poignant that Benjamin Cooper was a Jewish serviceman and, as you said, witnessed the camps. In fact, that is the cut from the interview that I'm going to play for our listeners. He was a frontline combat medic in the Army's 45th Infantry during World War II. He served in France and Germany, and according to the project's website, he endured intense combat operations such as the Battle of Nuremberg, and he was among, as you said, the first American troops to enter the concentration camp at Dachau. And as you said, as an American Jew, he was particularly disturbed by the atrocities of the Holocaust. And here is one of his observations from the interview, which is, of course, now housed in the Veterans History Project's archives. When he was in Munich, just as the war was about to end, General Dwight Eisenhower, also known as Ike, the supreme commander of the Allied Expeditionary Force in Europe, told Cooper's unit and other troops to, as you said, bear witness to the atrocities of Hitler's concentration camps. And here is veteran Benjamin Cooper talking about his experience at the infamous Dachau camp.
General Eisenhower ordered as many troops to go back to the concentration camps to be a witness. Mm-hmm. And that's why on the second day I went back to Dachau to be a witness, not to give first aid, just to be a witness as to what happened there. I boarded a truck with some other buddies, and we started ahead. We had no idea what we were going to see. I didn't have my camera. I didn't have film. I don't know what it was. But even as we neared the camp, the whole air was permeated like a fog of burning flesh. And we got to the main gate. On the gate, it said, Arbeit macht frei, work will set you free, in German. Which means work will set you free, but crazy. The captain told us, we're going to let you go into a big open field. Those that can walk will come up and talk to you. Others, they can't even get up. The sick, the living, and the dying. There were about 36 barracks, wooden single-story buildings there. The sick, the living, and the dying, each building held about 1,600. When it was built in 1933, the camp, it was supposed to hold 400 people. It's holding 1,600, men and women. Very little toilet facilities. A lot of typhus and dysentery around. It was rampant. So we walked into this open field, and we stayed there a while. Eventually, I saw people coming up to us, hundreds of them, gradually. Some were dressed, they could walk fairly well. Others, most of them were dressed in like blue and white faded pajamas. That's what they wore. And as they got closer, I couldn't tell men from women. It was impossible. If they weighed 50, 60 pounds or 70, it was a lot. Mm-hmm. It was crazy. That traumatized me, and my buddies too. They came up to us, and they hugged us. They gave us names of people we knew in the United States or elsewhere. They were just so happy to see us, you know? It was unbelievable. And we were just traumatized. The whole event, it bothers me to this day what those bastards did to innocent men and women.
Absolutely. That was veteran Benjamin Cooper talking about his experience at the Dachau concentration camp. Colonel Lloyd, I can't tell you how fascinating and enriching it has been to talk with you. I would like to close by asking you if you have anything else to add, and in particular, if you have a favorite interview or a story of a veteran from any of the wars, whether Vietnam, Korean, the more recent wars, Iraq or Afghanistan, that particularly stands out for you.
Well, thank you for asking. One, I just want to encourage your viewers to go up our website, loc.gov/vets, to get a sense for themselves of these amazing stories that would otherwise be lost. One of my favorites is John Stavast. He was a pilot during the Vietnam War, and he was in the Hanoi Hilton. And what's amazing is that he kept a diary, and he kept a diary on the back of toilet paper and other kinds of maps and pieces of paper that he found. And you can imagine if he'd been caught, that was a death sentence. And one of the things that he did was he kept track of the pilots that were coming into the Hanoi Hilton. And one of those pilots was John McCain. And John McCain came into the Hanoi Hilton on the 26th of October. And we also have John McCain's oral history. So now we have these two collections, and they start to talk to each other. And that's what I love about our collections. I would like for your viewers to consider going up our website, loc.gov/vets, so they can find these amazing stories for themselves. And we also have John McCain's oral history. So these two collections talk with each other.
Exactly. And let's not forget, John McCain was an extraordinary man, a senator from the state of Arizona, and as you said, an incredible military hero. And of course, he just passed away a couple of years ago.
Exactly. But again, his stories won't be lost. And those stories of ordinary Americans won't be lost if volunteers reach out to the veterans in their lives and their communities and listen, really listen, and get those stories and donate them to the Library of Congress. Help us make sure those stories are not lost.
Colonel Karen Lloyd is the director of the Veterans History Project at the U.S. Library of Congress. Colonel Lloyd, thank you so much for talking with us about this important project that honors our veterans. It was a true honor to speak with you.
Oh, Carol, thank you so much for having me.
Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Gary Jaffe and Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join us again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.